Hello. Welcome to another episode of the Failery Podcast, where we turn the pages backwards and go back to a previous chapter of founders' lives at earlier companies to unlock lessons that you can apply to your business today. I am Brandon Hendoko, and on this episode, I'm extremely excited to be joined by Buster Benson, who is the founder at 750 Words, an aptly named browser-based tool that rewards users with beautiful analytics and a therapeutic experience in return for writing 3 morning pages about anything. Prior to this, though, Buster also worked at Twitter, Slack, and Patreon, as well as founded Habit Labs, a platform that started as a news resolution but eventually leveraged the idea of social gamification to help its users start healthier habits. In this episode, Buster and I discuss his journey from creative writing to product, software with game-like elements, and the toughness that is often not covered that comes as a result of raising venture capital. Sit tight, get a notebook ready, and thank you again for listening. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help of our friends over at Referral Hero, the all-in-one platform to design and run flexible referral programs that grow your bottom line. If you're tired of wasting money on Facebook ads or writing tons of content that never rank on Google but already have loyal customers, you should definitely try a referral program. The Dollar Flight Club grew its business by 13%, and Holiday Pirates added 300,000 emails in less than a month after setting up their referral programs. The best thing about all of this is that you can get started in minutes with their no-code widgets, and if you sign up today, you can get 20% off with the code FAILERY20. Try it now for 14 days without any cost at referralhero.com. Once again, that's referralhero.com. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Failery Podcast, your one-stop shop for failed ventures, failed founders, but more importantly, the lessons you can learn from them. I'm so excited today to have Buster Benson on the podcast. Thank you, Buster, for being here.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here as well.
Perfect. So first off, congratulations on the new book launch.
Thank you.
So would you love to tell us what the book is about?
Yes. So the book is called Why Are We Yelling? The Art of Productive Disagreement. And it's my first book. It's published by Penguin Random House. But it's really just an approachable take on disagreement, productive disagreement, conflict resolution. And I did about 100 drawings for it. And it's really just a synthesis of many different fields of study around this that in an attempt to make it more approachable, more practical for people, now that our world is a bit more sort of contentious and conflict strewn with all of social media and the news going on. So half of it was for me and half of it was for can I turn this into something that's useful for other people too?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I'm just going to get into some background here, but I know this ties into your background at UW. You graduated in 98 with a bachelor's in English creative writing. And then, feel free to correct me where I'm wrong or pepper in some details where I missed here. But you have I'd love to say an impressive technical background. You did software at Amazon. You worked at Twitter. You did product and then Slack and then Patreon. And then after that, you founded 43 Things and lots of startups, I would say.
Yeah, it's almost hard to list them all. I'm old for one. And I've started 4 companies, I believe. So one of them is still around and kicking, the 750 Words. One of them was a bar and an art gallery in Seattle, Washington. And the others, one was a health change app and another was 43 Things, which was a goal-making social network. So a lot of them have been web-based sort of communities intended to sort of help people live better lives in some way or other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to just dive into this. I guess I'm just curious. Did you graduated UW with English creative writing. Did you ever knew you were going to do, software at Amazon, Twitter?
Yeah, it's a funny story because my father was an engineer. He was a CTO at a lot of old companies so Borland and Ashton Tate, which were both database companies. And so I grew up around computers. My grandfather was an engineer also, but more in the mechanical engineering sense. And so I had a lot of pressure to become an engineer. And I rebelled against that by saying I was going to be a poet and a novelist and a painter and, creative writing. So it was my rebellion to go away from engineering. But then by the time I found myself basically living 3 blocks from Amazon and got a job there after college. And after the advent of the internet, I became interested in it. And I saw that you can actually build things and it feels like magic. So I then started to pick it up on my own and learned pretty quickly just because I had been immersed in it, even though it was sort of against my will as a child.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to just dive deeper on this when you said, you picked it up quickly. I know I did some reading on my own and it said, you've said that you did night shift customer service at Amazon before moving on to learning code on the job and then moving on to software. or like if you could expand on this transition, like.
Yes, that's a funny story. So I was working in customer support, and you know, I learned about HTML by building the intranet for like training documents, because I eventually became a trainer. And so I was like building the intranet pages, and it was all just like HTML. And then I also had a journal on Diaryland and DiaryX and LiveJournal at the time. And I just got fascinated with this idea of like, well, you can sort of create these pages on the internet and they look cool and you can say things on them. And so it sort of tapped into my creative side, you know, creative writing side, because I was writing stories and stuff. But the actual shift happened. So I was, you know, I was intent to become a web developer at Amazon, but I was in customer support, different building, totally different, you know, field. I had no training, but nobody had training at that time. So Amazon had this sort of policy of basically just hiring liberal arts majors and then training them into becoming engineers. And so I was like, I can do that. And one day, you know, someone was like, do you know Perl? And I said, yeah, I know Perl. I didn't know Perl. But I did go to the bookstore and bought, you know, learn Perl in 7 days. Yeah. And, sure. You know, I spent the weekend basically cramming this, you know, something I had learned from college, and found a way to like sort of fake it, because all you had to do was cut and paste scripts from the internet and create forms and stuff. And that's all they really needed me to do. And that really started the wheels turning in my head. Like, okay, I could be a software engineer. And I had to harass basically the engineering team, because I would email them like, hey, here's a position, can I apply for it? And I would never get any responses. Eventually I let HR know, like, you know, this team, they're not responding to my emails. And so I don't know why I did that, but I did. And so they said, okay, fine, you can have an interview, but we're, you know, this position is closed now, so you're not gonna get it. I'm like, okay, anyway, I just wanna do the interview. And I went in and I, you know, used all my like, whatever charm I had, like, I could really do this. I could learn. I'm really passionate about it. And they gave me the job. So that's how I transitioned into engineering and, you know, just learned from there. And, you know, Amazon was built on a really old style of coding. Like, Perl was used for the internet, but the actual website was just built on, like, C and, like, make files that would generate HTML. Like, it was very basic. So it sort of, you know, the learning curve wasn't too hard. And I really enjoyed it. So just kept on going.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. I mean, like, this was, like, I assume, like, 99 or, like, 2000s Amazon, where, mm-hmm. like, they're just, wow, I didn't know they were just, like, hiring liberal arts merges. But, yeah, and then you moved on to do Twitter, you did product, and then between Twitter and the first startup, 43 Things, you founded Habit Labs, which I'd love to just, like, talk into. But before that, I guess, I hope this isn't, like, too far-fetched of a question, but, like, I want to get your comparison on, like, you know, going from working in industry, like, doing engineering at industry to, like, becoming a founder. I know, like, in the past, like, all of my interviews have said that they either became founders, like, accidentally, or, like, they knew that they were going to become founders, like, ever since they were, like, you know, 3 or 4. Did you ever know you were going to, you know, become a founder? Or when did this, like, entrepreneurial mindset, like, get instilled in you?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, I didn't even think I was going to be an engineer, so I didn't really consider founding until I was sure. At Amazon. And then, you know, once it all started clicking, you know, my father was a founder also. He started his own company. And so I got to see that sort of internal experience. Like, you know, I helped him, like, I tried to design the logo for him and, you know, it's like all these things, I come up with a name. And so I liked that stuff. And, you know, I was going through like junior high and high school. And so it wasn't an alien idea to me, but it wasn't until I found, you know, it was really like I was disillusioned at Amazon. I feel like I was just doing the same thing over and over again. But before I left, one of my, I guess, ingenious moves in hindsight was I decided I didn't want to become a manager. I wanted to become a level 1 designer and a level 1 product manager, level 1 project manager, level 1 engineer, level 1 everything, so that I could become a more generalist. And my boss at the time entertained this idea. He wouldn't actually change my title, but he let me sort of shadow other teams and other functions to like sort of pick up these skills. And so design was one that was really helpful later on. And so by the time I was disillusioned, I was like, okay, well, we have all the skills we need to start something. Why don't we just do that? And we just, like 3 or 4 of us from Amazon all sort of left and started this company. So it wasn't an accident and it wasn't, you know, predestination of any sort. It was just like, you know, let's do something different. And so that happened that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you did a bunch of things different, at least from what I've researched. You moved from Amazon after you did, you know, PM and software. You founded, you know, your art gallery, and then you founded Health Month as well as like Budge, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so I'd love to just like talk about that. Like, where'd your like ideas come from?
Yeah, I don't know. So the sequence of events was, you know, Amazon for about 5 years, and then I started 43 Things with some people from Amazon. And that one was, it was called the Robot Co-op at the time. So our mission was like, let's just do something interesting on the internet and then try to make money. And it was early days. So like we were, you know, around for tagging and, you know, the very first, you know, glimpses of SEO, blogging, all that stuff. And so it was fun. We got to invent our own culture, invent our own manifesto, invent our own sort of work life. We only worked 4 days a week, but 10 hours a day, for example.
Sure.
And like all these things where we just felt so free to do whatever we want to do. And that really was appealing to me. I thought I would never be able to work in an office again after that. And so that from there, but you know, the internet wasn't everything. So I also wanted to think, what can we do in the real world? And so that's where the bar came from. And the art gallery is going to be like a real life community instead of an internet community. And then, so the thing pulling me forward was just like, the internet's really cool and there's so much stuff we can do. And the things that resonated with me, like 43 Things is about goals. Health Month was about habits, which are also like, sort of like goals. 750 Words is like the writing habit. So they all sort of came
like
out of one
thread.
Another.
Yeah,
like Russian dolls or something. And slowly refining until and then exploring different areas. But yeah, just like following that thread as far as I could go and, you know, realizing how hard it was to run a business and trying to make different mistakes every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good segue into like our first topic of like your quote unquote failed startup of Habit Labs or like Health Month. You talked about it like as like setting goals for like health. And I know it started as a Habit Labs or like Health Month started off a New Year's resolution that you held with your friends. Is this like still an ongoing resolution or like tell us a little bit about the resolution and how you really, really went into like, I guess, starting Habit Labs or like what the idea for Health Month was?
Yeah. So Health Month was, you know, I had already done 43 Things. I'd already done McLeod Residence, which is the bar. And I'd gotten married and we had actually just had a son and my wife and I, we didn't have health insurance. We didn't have any money. And I was just like, I just need to do this one more time. So Health Month was like, you know, I'm going to do my last shot, you know, at the startup thing. Like it was the first line of code was written like during, you know, my son's first month of life, basically. And I worked from a coffee shop and the idea came from something that we did every year. So like, my wife and I, every January, we would do this thing called Health Month with our friends. And we would basically just come up with really, really strict rules for ourselves to like, no alcohol, no meat, no dairy, no sugar, no processed grain, you know, and, you know, exercise this many times a week. And it was just like really intense, like introduction to the year. We had been doing this for several years. She had been doing it with her friends even longer. And we do continue to do it. I think this year was been a little lackluster. Like we, you know, didn't drink and, you know, but then on date nights we did. So
a little bit of a caveat.
Yeah. It's fizzled out a bit because, you know, at its heart was like, okay, well, every year we do this and then we go back to our bad habits the rest of the year. And so now we've slowly just tried to integrate healthier habits into the full year and, you know, don't have to do this huge hard reset every year. So that was the tradition and it still continues to happen, but it's a lot. It's more sprawled out at this point. We don't all follow the super strict rules anymore.
Yeah, sure. And then at its peak, Habit Labs or like Habit Labs was like Health Month. It was Budge. And then I think it was Contagion, right? From Jen McCabe.
So Health Month was my company. Contagion was Jen McCabe's company. And we merged them and became Habit Labs.
Habit Labs, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Sorry about that. And then you guys were, from like my own words, you guys were like social gamification to help players like take steps towards better health. And then like you could like, you know, share your, I guess, lives with other people so that like you could build like this network effect of like people helping to heal, quote unquote, their friends in game and outside and get healthier with them. Is that like a good summary?
Yeah. So they were both sort of similar in the sense like you would set challenges for yourself and then, you know, it would be social. And we were tapping into some of the gamification stuff that was happening at the time. We were both, you know, it was like sort of a SaaS company for health that, you know, charged a small amount each month, like $5 a month, and adapted to you over time so that it slowly got better. You know, the recommendations for you, how to change your habits would change over time and improve. So it was really trying to combine a lot of these ideas about like bringing community to something that's hard. Like habits are like the goal that really is the hardest to change. And we were just stumbling into it. It's like, this is, you know, a big space. Like she came more from the, you know, healthcare industry. I came more from the consumer web, you know, industry, and we just try to combine those two things.
Yeah, I'm just like very, very interested into like just like diving into it. I guess what brought you guys to like the idea of, you know, besides your like health month, like in real life with like you and like your friends, like the New Year's resolution, I guess what really brought you to the idea of, like, you know, social gamification in healthcare?
Yeah, it's just something that we were doing at the time. I think that the Fitbit was new. We were the first company to use the Fitbit API. We worked really closely with them to, like, integrate it. We also worked really closely with Foursquare, which was really new at the time, to, like, you could earn badges by, you know, checking in at the gym. That was one of your goals. And so we had all these badges, and it was, you know, we were had already spent so much time, you know, blogging and sort of like Flickr and links and bookmarks. Like, so this was like, let's make it real. Let's make it something that's going to actually make people's lives better. And we knew that there was something here. We were by far not the only ones in this space. There were dozens of other companies that were all trying to do this. All of us, you know, sort of like had this arc of some level of success and then sort of eventually run out of money and go out of business because it's such a hard space. And you have to eventually find a business model there. And that business model oftentimes relies on effectiveness, right? Like, you know, but there's a problem there because effective health change means that you don't need the tool after you've succeeded at changing thing. And so you lose your customers as they succeed. And also there's this problem of, like, most things aren't effective. So you lose them that way too. So it was a really, like, you know, provocative, enticing idea that, you know, is really hard to turn into a business. And everyone, you know, so many hundreds of startups have, like, thrown themselves against the cliffs to try to, like, solve this.
Doing something. Yeah.
So we were just one of those.
Yeah. And then I guess, like, I hate to, like, I don't want this to be like a blast from the past, but, like, at peak, like, how did you guys do, or, like, how was the social gamification, you know, taken well? Do you have any stories of, like, you know, people, like, I guess, like, getting really, really healthy with Health Month?
Yeah. So there were lots of success stories. We found that, like, there will always be a percentage of users that succeed because they are already, and it's hard to know if you cause it to succeed, but they just do. And so there's a contingent of people that, you know, we're just getting healthier and healthier over time. We were really popular because of the Foursquare integration. We were really popular in Indonesia. And so there was, like, all of these people that were sort of using the site just to get the badges. But, you know, in the meantime, like, very active and definitely participated a lot. It was a really strange phenomenon. But I think that the habits that were the most sort of successful were really sort of everyday habits, like going to the gym or drinking water or eating, you know, a little bit better. And, you know, there was definitely a good size of people that were doing that. I would say, so that it was $5 a month. I think we're probably making between $2,000 and $4,000 a month, you know. So from that, you can sort of guess how many people were paying for it. And then, like, there was also, like, people using it for free. But there was always this churn of, like, people coming in, people dropping off. And we raised money for it, which bought us some time. But ultimately, we needed the numbers to be 10 times, 100 times that, and we couldn't get there. We couldn't, like, find the thing that was going to retain people long enough that to, like, allow the new people to start filling up the user size. And so that's what inspired us to, like, test another strategy, which was more mobile-based with Budge, which was a very much, like, basically using notifications more intensely to remind people about what to do and to let them check in with mobile, and so hoping that that would increase engagement. But then, yeah, we sort of ran out of money right around then. So it sort of fell apart.
Yeah, thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing. And this churn was, like, was this, like, all organic? Because, you know, like, I assume, like, some of them were just, like, users who didn't want to, I guess, continue using, you know, Habit Labs or, like, any of your products. But I also know you talked a little bit about, like, you know, the churn from people who, like, already post getting healthy or, like, post, like, hitting their goal, like, just stopping using you guys because they assumed, like, it was just, like, a, you know, one-time thing that after they reach, they just, like, stop using? Or is there any other, like, churn that was, like, you know, a source of, like, you guys not, I guess, getting enough people to fill the funnel?
Yeah. So a monthly challenge, you know, ends, right? So you have to think of new reasons to do a monthly challenge. And, like, even my own use of this was once a year. So that was not an all-year kind of thing. Whenever you focus on something this much, it's hard. And so if you find yourself paying for something that you've then, like, stopped doing the challenges, you're going to leave. But that doesn't mean that that month wasn't valuable. That didn't change anything. So it's really hard to know. Like, people loved the site. People really enjoyed it. But, like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to keep them engaged year round. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to want to keep doing it. So realistically, you know, if we got 500 new signups a month, and I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, and then, you know, 100 of them start paying for a month, and then next month, 50 or 70 of them, you know, cancel, then, or it actually wasn't that high. It was like 30% canceling every month. Then you would you run out of them pretty quick. Like that's sort of the model. You can just map it out and then see that you got to change something in that funnel to work better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I oftentimes, when we were talking with our investors at the time, we're just like, you know, this is a path. This is a, you know, a research path that we are, you know, honestly, just like at the beginning of. It would take a lot of iteration to get to the point where, you know, this is going to be 10 times as big. And so you're basically funding a research project and, you know, investors don't want to do that as much unless there's more sign of like huge potential. Like what is special about this company that makes it seem like they're going to succeed where all the other ones aren't because there were so many of them at the time. And yeah, so we honestly didn't even try to, well, that's not true. We did try to raise money again, had some trouble, and then eventually just gave money back to our very little like any, money yeah, to our right. current investors and close it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like, just like closing up, like I know you guys like released like public facing web. And then what happened to, I guess, did like, was the same result with like Budge and everything else? Like, where's Jen now, if I could ask?
I don't know where she is. I think she's working in a hardware startup somewhere, last I heard, but I'm not positive. And we sold Health Month to a small like dev shop in, I think, Canada, and he kept it running for another several years. I just looked at it recently and it's been closed down, but that was, you know, that was, I don't know how many years now, so 10 years ago. So it was a business. It was a small business, you know, that could sustain itself with a really small team, if that's what you wanted to do. So we sort of just sold the parts, returned all the money to the investors that we had left. And Budge, we didn't do anything with that because it barely launched and was even more infant in its infancy than Health Month. So unfortunately, you know, the one thing we did do at the very end was we created a paper health app that you could print out and fold up and put in your pocket called the Hipster Habit app.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was like our swan song. Like, here's everything we know about habits. You don't need an app. You could just put it in your pocket and write on it. And, you know, that's the open sourcing of sort of what we've learned. And that's still up, actually. Hipsterhabitapp.com, I believe, is the URL. And that's one of the most fond memories of that sort of, you know, really tough time that we had.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to try it out. But yeah, bringing you to like the status quo before like we move on from like Health Month, I guess today, right? What do you think about the health or like, you know, like social gaming industry? Like if you're still following it, like are there any opportunities that you like from like a consumer web experience, like see like opportunities to like gamify other sectors of like consumer behavior?
Yeah, you know, right now I'm a big fan of Peloton. I think, you know, they get made fun of, but they have just mastered the elements that matter as far as, you know, game design goes. I don't think it's necessarily gamification anymore, but like the way that they use a number of days that you've gone on, the way that they sort of make it social by like you're in this class, but you're at home. They do shout outs for you. You can do high fives with people that are writing at the same time as you. You can sort of compete against yourself, or you can compete against people that are your friends, even if you've done your ride at the different times. So I think Peloton is just, you know, a masterclass in how to do social gaming for health, you know, and it's a high price point, so it's not accessible to everyone, but just if you're just going to study what kinds of things could work, you know, I think the high price is necessary because, you know, that's part of the business model. And it's also, you know, a bike, so it's...
Yeah, it's there's like hardware associated. Yeah.
But yeah, I think they're doing great. You know, I watch Fitbit and sort of like Apple Watch, but I think there's like this fatigue you hit when it's just about counting steps or just about counting calories or just about doing these things. There has to be, like, that's where the social element is so important. You have to make it about more than just sharing numbers with each other or trying to hit a number. And health is weird because you do go through cycles. So that's where I think all those startups, including mine, struggled and continue to struggle that, you know, are here. There's a lot less of them now than there were 10 years ago. So I think that's saying something as well.
Yeah, I know. I think if anything, like if I'm not stretching, I think like you guys were maybe like, you know, ahead of your time, or like you guys were like the visionaries of like starting, you know, like this game design and tech. Cause I know there's like a huge push for like good design, and like a lot of it comes from games. I don't know if you're familiar with like Superhuman, like the email app, but you know, Rahul, their founders, like, I'm a big fan of Superhuman. Their mantra is like, you know, software design like a game, or like you just move faster and faster. But yeah, maybe I think if you guys launched a little bit later, maybe you would have like hit the wave correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all timing, and it's like where you are on the wave for sure. And I've definitely been able to benefit from that luck a few times. It's just that, you know, it's, you can't control it. You just gotta like, you know, find the timing that works.
Yeah. And absolutely. Thank you so much for being vulnerable about Habit Labs, Health Month, etc. But moving forward, just like, you know, talking about your life story, this was like the time you did Twitter and then Slack and then Patreon. you did like product for like all of these companies. And then just like, I guess I don't want to like rehash the same question, but like moving from, you know, being a founder for like several companies, McLeod Residence, and then like 43 Things, what pulled you back to industry, or like what pulled you back into like working on product instead of like doing software?
Yeah. So honestly, after Habit Labs folded, you know, and I started it with this promise, like, hey, if this doesn't work, I'm getting a real job kind of thing. And that's what happened. So, you know, when it folded up, we were also in Seattle. My wife was not as much of a fan of Seattle. She's from New York and Philadelphia. She didn't like the weather. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get a job. We're going to have health insurance. I'm going to have a salary again. It's going to be great. You know, I won't be able to like work on my passion thing, but like we have a kid. And so it's basically like, I'm going to take a vacation from working, which it turned out to be, because startups compared to just having a job, you know, somewhere even like Twitter is, you know, so much easier to just work at a company. And, you know, you get paid way more, you know, get to work with people, it's fun. And ultimately, you know, I spent 10 years, 15 years trying to, you know, build a successful business. You know, all of my money has come from just working at a company. So like, you know, Amazon and Twitter and Slack, and I've all like, you know, gone public, and like that, all that stuff, just like, that's the easy way to make money, I guess, versus, so, and I did end up enjoying the craft of product. Like, I think it's such an interesting problem that never gets dull, never, you know, you never master it. So you're always learning, and you don't have to deal with the things like pay stubs and taxes and all that shit.
Sure.
But yeah, it was simpler, more pleasant, and paid better, and had health insurance, which was helpful with a newborn. So, but yeah, that's the honest part. And I found it that I didn't dislike it either. Like I ended up enjoying it and meeting great people and working on great things. It's just that it wasn't. And now here I am again, sort of working on like small things.
Yeah, sure.
And so this cycle happens where, you know, I think my happy place is working on small things with small groups of people, with, you know, long periods of working on big things with lots of people to help sustain it.
Yeah, absolutely. You've done a great, you know, job of like segueing, like either like consciously or unconsciously, just like segueing me into like my next question. But yeah, so you did a total of like 6 years, or like 5-6 years in, you know, working on product. And then I guess, you know, was 750 words, did it come about like from, you know, people with you at Patreon, or was this like more of a solo thing?
Yeah, so strangely, I started 750 words in 2009. It was a website that I built on my own, you know, in like a week, and launched it, and it was even before Habit Labs. And so I was like, 750 words is cool, but what if we applied that same idea to health? And so that's what Habit Labs was. Strangely, 750 words has continued to grow for the last 10 years. It just turned 10 like last month. And so it was an idea that came from even before Twitter, Slack, or Patreon, and just continued to hum in the background and make money. And my wife has been like the community director and support person for a long time. And I've just been itching to just improve it. But the very concept of just like write 3 pages, make it private. You could just get all your thoughts out. And I add like some like cool stats and word counts and distractions and badges and all these things that were, you know, part of Health Month too, towards writing and journaling. And it's really rewarding and doesn't need a lot of features. So it sort of lived for 10 years with very few new features just because it has enough. And, you know, I enjoy journaling and I enjoy writing, and it's always helped me as a tool. So when it came time to like, okay, well, what are the things we could do to escape tech? You know, this was one of the options, the other one being writing a book. And so I decided to do both. And this is the first year that I'm actually focusing on this old project instead of other things.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on like 750 words turning 10. I really love this idea of just like, you know, writing 3 pages in a day and then like clearing the mind, or like get the ideas flowing throughout the day. I know like it's definitely something that I would benefit from. But yeah, so I guess I'm just very, very curious. Like, I know this has been, you know, like growing for like in the background, or like humming in the background for like 10 years. I guess in that sense, like, or like, was the growth all organic? Like, you know, like friends referring friends? And like, did you do anything, you know, within your product job, like to, I guess, spur the word about like people getting on 750 words? Or
no, it's been all organic, which is like, wow, the anomaly, because I've built so many of these sites that, you know, including ones that I just put all my heart and soul into, that just still can't grow. So this was the super anomaly in the sense that it just kept on growing like 3% a month for 10 years. And, you know, did no marketing, I've done nothing, no incentives to spread the word. There's no way to share things really. And so now what's really exciting to me is like, oh no, coming from, you know, now that, you know, have 20 years of startup and, you know, product management experience, and there's so much low hanging fruit to do that, you know, just like internationalizing it, making a mobile app, making it faster, making it less buggy, making it more pleasant in the onboarding. You know, my homepage is just like a wall of text. So, but I sort of enjoy that it's janky, and I think that's part of the branding and part of the charm. So I don't want to like get rid of all that, but I don't know. I just see it as like, oh wow, there's these like, you know, little site that exists and it's sort of, you know, ugly and old and broken, but people like it. So we can just just fix some pieces of it and focus on it and just give it some love and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, I hate to like just like laud you with like, you know, just constant phrase, but like, I think the idea is like actually beautiful. Like, I was going to go over to Brown for like rhetoric or like creative writing. My parents like were definitely not for that. So now I'm here. But yeah, I think like definitely it's something like I could benefit from. I guess I don't want to, you know, grill you about your numbers here because yeah, I'm not going to give you any money, but like, do you have like, I guess, constant people like coming back? I guess like I want to like just like shoot for the future here, but where do you see 750 words going? I know you like talked about like how you love it, like kind of being janky. Like, is there like anything that you're going to do to like refine it or like keep that like, I guess, essence there?
Yeah. So talked about how the retention and churning of people, you know, on Health Month was just not sustainable. 750 words is the opposite, right? Like, there are like 33 people that I see right now that I wrote today that have been writing every day for 3,000 days.
Wow.
Right? So like almost the entire life of the product. And then there's like all the way from every single milestone from, a, you know, 3 days to 10 days to 30 days to 100 to 500 to 1,000, 2,000. Like, people just keep on writing because it's so rewarding once you start doing it. And so I don't lose people, you know, at all. Like, the hurdle is signing up, I think. And then, because I, you know, I put a lot of obstacles in front of you to sign up.
Yeah.
But then once you're there, you know, there's no reason to stop. Anyone can build the site in a week, but for some reason, nobody has. And so it still exists. But yeah, I think there's just something about the simplicity of it that brings people back. As far as like, where do I see it in the future? I mean, my goal is just to, you know, sort of give it some love. I want to spend all of 2020 working on this and try to double it in terms of users and see if that's possible. I think simple things like internationalizing it, because like, there's a lot of people in other parts of the world that are using it that don't know English that are still using the site. A mobile app, I never thought it was going to be the case that people would want to write 750 words on the phone, but it's definitely the case that people do this. And I know I wrote a good chunk of my book on my phone, so I know that it can happen, and I don't really support that today. So that's another easy one. And just making it work better for schools, work better for groups, work better for, you know, I also want to make it cheaper for people that can't afford it and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of these, like 100 ideas that, you know, are not even controversial. They're just things that would need to be done. And so I'm rebuilding it from the bottom up. Just like, I want it to look the same, but not exactly the same, but I want it to function very similarly, but just work faster. You know, the browsers can do so much more now than they could 10 years ago. You know, things like storing things in the browser, all the advancements with JavaScript and that kind of stuff. So just all that stuff is on the plate, but I'm not going to try to, like, you know, turn it into a multi-billion dollar business or anything. I'm just like, this is still a family business, and I don't want to hire people either. So
just continue, you know, 3% growth month over month for, like, you know, the next 10 years or something. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, like, it's a noble cause. And, like, I think, like, I'm definitely going to get on 750 words over this. And, like, hopefully I can write for the next 10 years. I guess just, like, bridging the two, right? But any tangible lessons, you know, like, I know you talked a little bit about, like, churn. But, like, is there any tangible lessons from Habit Labs, Budge, etc. that you want to apply to 750 words?
Not raising money, not hiring a co-founder,
not
scaling, all the things. I mean, I think the worst part of all of this has been the mistakes I made by listening to VCs tell me what I needed to do. Like, and it all starts with just saying, like, oh, I want to raise some money. Like, I just go around and raise a couple $100,000. Well, that invites, you know, random strangers with lots of money.
More people, but, you know, to get in the round. Yeah.
So like, okay, well, in order to do that, you're going to get a business person as a CEO. And in order to do that, and now you have all this money, who are you going to hire? And how are you going to, like, where are you going to be marketing? And all this pressure that ultimately takes you away from just building a good product. And so I'm done with that aspect of building businesses personally. Not because I think it's 100% bad, but it's just not for me anymore. And I'm just like, anything I could do to keep it small, scrappy, and sort of independent, and, you know, have my own sort of aesthetic and ideals embedded in there as much as possible without the pressure to grow
like,
too
please
fast.
Please invest. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, wow, this is going to be a spicy episode.
Yes, I have lots of spicy thoughts in that direction.
Sure, we'll see. I don't know if like any of those thoughts should be like any more public, but yeah, definitely. Yeah, so like the final question that I have, I guess, like I've been trying this concept with like another of other people that I've like talked to, but, you know, going from, you know, Buster era or like circa, you know, 2011, 2010, you know, like doing Habit Lab, just like really being heads down. Are there any words, you know, like you've now like working on Habit Lab or you now working on like 750 words and just like taking this growth by growth? Is there anything you would say to, you know, founders and like yourself still, you know, in the trenches and like working, whether or not they be successful, whether or not like, you know, their companies like pre-shut down or something? Are there any like any tips or like any advice that you would tell people?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it could be an hour on that easily. The hardest thing about starting a company is the fact that you're going to be highly motivated to ignore the problems. And there's a saying like fake it till you make it, you know, move fast, break things, that kind of stuff, where we are just given permission to ignore the obvious problems. And it's never worked out well for me in terms of just like, because you end up doing things that eventually the problem is going to become unavoidable and it's going to destroy you. So like try to understand the pieces that are going into it and find the simplest path to something sustainable that you can find. It doesn't have to have the things that you see in other places. It could just look at it from first principles and say like, okay, well, why would someone use this? What are they doing now instead of it? How do I step in and sort of like introduce them to this better thing? And would they be willing to pay for it to switch? Because it's as simple as that in terms of just like, you got to replace something in their lives with something better. And then you can go out and test that immediately. So you don't need to do a 3-month, you know, sort of vision quest in the desert, or you don't have to, you know, raise money first to hire people. Just like do the paper thing, do the interviews, and find that nugget that's like got some gold in it in terms of, oh yeah, this is something valuable that people want and are already doing in less sort of pleasant ways, and something that I can help improve. So just be realistic on that front, because it's easy to get swept up in the glory of startups and products and, you know, making $1 billion, and creates a big blind spot for you that'll eventually come reckoning. A time for reckoning will eventually come. And I just see this, you know, it's so easy to fall down that. I mean, I've done it multiple times. So it's hard to avoid that willful blindness, but that's what I would have told myself back then. Sort of what I've been focusing on with cognitive biases and systems thinking and first principles thinking is like, just be honest with yourself. Look for the thing you don't want to see that's going to be a problem later on.
Yeah. Wow. What a great message to end. You know, I hope we've brought people back or like won people's favor back after like you talked about, you know, your spicy thoughts about VC. But yeah, are there, you know, anything that you'd love to plug or like any way that our listeners could like, you know, reach out to you, like anything on Twitter? I know we've definitely like done a little bit about talking about the book. People should get the book. You should definitely get the book.
Yeah, if it resonates. BusterBenson.com is my website with the book and, you know, lots of other weird projects. At Buster on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. Easy to find on the internet. And don't feel afraid to reach out if you have questions. Anyone can reach out. And I'm also happy to give your listeners like free months of 750 words too. If we want to add a link to that or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely reach out to Buster if you're looking for, you know, spicy thoughts about VC, et cetera, et cetera.
That was just the tip of the iceberg.
We're going to have another conversation, you know, like non-recorded, just like 2 hours about what we think about VC. But yeah, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Buster. I really had a great time. I hope you did too. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It was great.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Failery Podcast. I've been Brandon Hendoko, and once more, I'd like to thank our friends over at Referral Hero for making this podcast episode possible. If you're looking to grow your business organically through word of mouth, make sure to check out their tool that'll allow you to create and grow a referral program within minutes. More than 7,000 companies are using it already, generating over 30 million leads, and now you can get it too for 20% off with the code FAILERY20. Try it now for 14 days without any cost at referralhero.com.